the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday life?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of three who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Creeps, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom of one, learning to balance work and home and trying to find a little bit of time to work on something just for fun.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Last episode, we chatted with Jessica Abel, and Jessica is a cartoonist, an artist, a writer, a college professor, and a mom. She's also created a ton of resources to help creative people actually be creative. So our interview with her was just so full of good tips and tricks, and we really wanted to take an extra episode here with just Ashley and I to dive in a bit more with our own experiences and walking through Jessica's book, which its title is Growing Gills, How to Find Creative Focus When You Are Drowning in Your Daily Life. And that just sounds perfect for both of us and probably a lot of our listeners out there as well. And we wanted to talk about what kind of changes we are making in our own creative lives because of this book and the free workbook that kind of goes along with it.
Yes, and it has made a big difference for us. And actually, I had never heard of this book until we interviewed Addie Zierman in episode 4 of this season. That was our episode of December 2018. And she mentioned on the podcast that she has used Growing Gills to help her through the process of writing her books. So with that proof that it has worked for a published author, I was really excited to dive into Growing Gills at the beginning of 2019. And it did not disappoint for either of us.
No.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, there's a free workbook you can download that pairs with it. I personally did not use the workbook. I decided to just use my regular writing notebook. But I think the real beauty of this book is the exercises and activities that Jessica walks you through, regardless of where you decide to write them down. So there are things like a stuff audit, where you take inventory of everything on your desk or your to-do list or just whatever you've got going on that's kind of cluttered, and you have to decide, is this mine to do, or can I take this off my plate forever? There are different tools like choosing one goal, choosing your tool that you're going to use to sort of keep your life and your creative work organized. It's just a very practical, actionable, hands-on book that I think we appreciate.
Yes, it really, really is. And one other exercise that we talked briefly about in our episode with Jessica, where we interviewed her, was the Vision Quest activity, which sounds really like video gamey. I don't know. I haven't played a video game in a very long time. So I really sat down with this activity and looked at where I want to say it's 5 years from now. Like, where do you want to be 5 years from now in your creative life? And when I sat down and started like writing out what I want my creative life to look like, it did not at all jive with the one goal that I had already written down in my little workbook thing. And I realized that I needed to change my goal if I was ever going to make it to the vision of the creative life that I wanted, which sounds really like hokey and woo-woo, but I promise it is. It's not. It's just really revelatory, I think, of getting to that point and doing that like vision quest activity and being like, oh, nothing I'm doing now is going to get me to this point, which means I need to change what I'm doing now, or this is never going to be reality.
Yes, I totally agree. Like, it's, you have to go into the exercises with an open mind and actually complete them. You can't just like think, oh, that sounds like a neat exercise, and then not do it because you think it sounds too easy or you think you won't get anything out of it. Because if you actually sit down and do the work, I can guarantee you that something is going to come up that you did not realize about your own creative life. And even though we are both going to be talking about this in the context of writing, this book is applicable to pretty much any creative endeavor. I can't think of one right now that it could not apply to. It's just really, really good for creatives of any type.
Yeah, and I think it would even count if you're trying to launch a new creative venture or creative business. Like maybe your goal is to get an Etsy shop up and running. I think this would help you do that in like very specific, actionable ways.
Yeah, totally agree. It could almost be a productivity book in its own right. Like it's just very, very practical, which we like to see because there are a lot of creative books out there that are a little bit more woo-woo. I'm looking at Big Magic here where it's like, all right, well, this is very inspirational, but I still don't know what I'm doing.
Yes, this was an excellent 300-page pep talk. Now what?
Yeah.
And I reread Big Magic at the beginning of this year too to lead the Exhale Book Club through it. And that was really great and really fun, but it still didn't like light a fire under me like Growing Gills has. So I hope that's a glowing recommendation for Growing Gills for all of you out there. But so what actually were your big takeaways from our chat with Jessica and then also kind of your read through of Growing Gills and maybe working through those exercises in the workbook?
All right. So I had the most breakthroughs with the very basic exercises at the beginning of the book. And her concept of idea debt was actually revolutionary for me, which sounds extremely dramatic, but I do not think that I'm exaggerating when I say that that made such a big difference. So I'm going to read a brief excerpt from the book that describes and defines idea debt. Idea debt describes a phase of the creative process where many people get stuck, sometimes permanently. It's what happens when you spend a ton of time picturing what a project is going to be like and how awesome it's going to be to have this thing done and in the world, and how cool it, and therefore you, will look, and how in demand you'll be, and how much money you're going to make, and very little time actually making the thing. So that's me. I am raising my hand. I will spend so much time thinking that something is a good idea because I can see in my head like, oh, my life will be like this when it's done and it's going to be so cool. And, you know, you might do a little bit of prep work or a little bit of research and you sort of trick yourself into thinking that you're going after this idea and this goal, but you are not. And so for this idea debt activity, you write down everything you have going through your mind that is an active, open idea. And as you think of new ideas, which you constantly are, if you're anything like me, you write those down too. And my list was so long and so many of them did not even apply to what I want out of my life. It was like, why is this here? Why am I spending time on this? I had never spent any focus time on any of the ideas that I had written down. And it was just really blatantly apparent to me that I was wasting my time by even keeping some of these ideas around and not putting them on the back burner for later, or not just saying, okay, well, that might be a cool idea for somebody else, but that's not what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That was really good too. And I really liked to, at the beginning of the book, she has you write down your idea debt inventory and just list out everything and not do anything with them, like just make a list. And later, after you've read through some of her process stuff, you come back to the idea debt inventory and actually decide what's worth keeping and what's worth tabling or what's worth, you know, just jettisoning altogether. So did you do that in two chunks?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I only let it go like a couple days before I went back to my list because as I was adding to it, I was like getting mad about it. I was like, no, I need to. So as soon as I got to the next step in the book, I was like, yep, we're going to hack this down because I am wasting time here. And it was making me mad, quite frankly. So then one of the other activities that really made a big difference for me, and I think for you too, was prioritizing and choosing that one goal that Jessica talked about a little bit in the podcast episode too. The whole thing is that you need to focus. You need to focus on one thing. And we are so bad at that sometimes. And I have never been able to really narrow down and choose something to focus on because for me, what I get caught up on is I am a writer for myself and also for my job. Mm-hmm. And so I have always found it just super hard to draw that line between, well, if I don't take this client, I won't make as much money, even though that's taking time away from this other creative thing I want to do. Like, it's really, really hard for me to separate those two types of writing identities. And Jessica has you actually assign criteria to every idea that's on your list to help you choose a priority. So she calls them quick wins, which are things that are either most of the way completed or that you could get done pretty quickly. Follow the money, which is something that's hopefully going to earn you money. Platform building, which might not earn you money, but will hopefully help you gain a little bit more status in the world, I guess, or help you gain more followers. And big picture. And those big picture projects are usually bigger things that take longer, but that matter more to you. And seeing them written out like that, I had a ton of quick wins that didn't matter, some of which also could have made money, but most of which didn't. And I'm like, okay, so what's the point of that other than just making me feel good for like 5 minutes? And then the only big picture idea that I had written down was my novel. It was the only one. So it became the obvious choice for my one goal to focus on.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, this was really interesting for me too, like choosing one goal and writing all those things down. Because I didn't have as many ideas as you. I had maybe 10 like written down, like actual ideas that I had written down. And they were pretty evenly split between quick wins, money, like things I have to do for work because this is how I make my living. And then also the big picture stuff. And I even just realized that some of the quick wins or the things that I really thought were goals in my life just aren't goals. And one of the things you and I talked about, I think just last week, was I've just kind of come to the realization that I am never going to write memoir about myself. Like, I'm never going to write a book, creative nonfiction, about my life. It's just not that my life is too complicated, because that is not the way to go. That's not something I really want to do. I don't want to go on a book tour and share all those vulnerabilities. Like, that is just not who I am as a person, I don't think. Maybe 20 years from now, I'll have a different answer. But that meant that anything on my list that was a personal essay that I wanted to pitch somewhere didn't matter anymore, because those were all stepping stones to writing a memoir, and I don't want to write a memoir. And so why am I spending time and energy and effort on these little things that are a stepping stone to a goal that I don't even care about? And so then I went back to, what is my one goal? Like, what is the thing that I want to be focused on? What does my 5-year plan want to be focused around? And that is writing a novel, just like you, Ashley. And it's one that I've been working on for 6-7 years and have just never finished. And I need to do that. So the one goal exercise, at first I had it filled out for a completely wrong goal. And then once I went back to that idea to inventory worksheet and worked through, like, what do I really want this to look like? It was obvious that I had chosen the wrong goal and needed to recalibrate.
Yeah, and I think that's a really fantastic breakthrough to have. I mean, if there's one thing this book has done, it has shown us how wrong and misled we can be in our own lives. And, like, for example, we had similar breakthroughs about the personal essays, and I enjoy writing about the small things that are happening in my life right now as a mom. And I think part of that is because it gives me a way to process everything and to feel a little bit outside of myself, as we're just stuck in the drudgery of this same thing day after day after day. But much like you, I look at that and go, okay, but I don't want to build a career out of, you know, writing memoir or writing even a book of essays about motherhood. Maybe that's a place that just needs to be reserved for me in my journal. And I feel very happy with that, because that's something I've been conflicted about before, mainly because of all those shoulds that we talked about on the podcast with Jessica. And so this is another activity. She has you deal with all the shoulds that you might be holding on to without even actively realizing it. You're supposed to write down every single thing that you have either, you know, consciously or unconsciously been telling yourself that you should be doing in relation to your creativity. And so many of them do not even make sense, like you pointed out on our podcast. Like, Some of the shoulds I've been holding on to that make no sense are, I should take a break from social media and I should be more active on Instagram. I should wake up before my kids and I should get more sleep. And I should let my kids see me write, versus I should never do any focused work with the kids around so I can be fully 100% present with them. And these things are not possible. They're just not possible. And that's part of why we get led around in circles and kind of lose track of the thing we really want, because we're listening to all these impossible shoulds.
Yes. And having, I mean, far higher expectations for ourselves than anyone else does is always, I think, what it comes back to as well. Like, no one expects either of us to, you know, hold down a job and be a mom and write a best-selling novel, like, all in one go. Like, that's not, no one else is telling us we need to do this, but we feel like we should because it's what our daily life combines with our dream life. And so just like you, like so many of my shoulds were contradictory. I should read more. I should read less. I should get out and make more friends, which I really ought to do. But that's right next to, I should stay home and be more productive. Like spending time, you know, going to concerts or whatever is not how I want to spend my time. And so I really liked how this activity just really did demonstrate that there is just so much tension in the creative life. And it's not ever really going to go away. But I think if we can kind of name it and recognize it, it allows us to move forward and maybe not carry all those shoulds with us all the time.
Yes, I totally agree. So what were some of the other activities that really affected you, Abby? I know we've already talked about a couple of them, but there were more, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the stuff audit for me, where you sit down at your desk or your workspace and kind of go through everything that's sitting there, everything that you feel is like on your to-do list, you go through and you decide, is this something I need to do now? Is this something I need to do later? Is this something only I can do? Or can I, you know, delegate this to someone else? And what I really realized with that activity was that I've already kind of pared down our, you know, paper life is what I'm going to, the paper part of our life, as much as physically possible. If I get rid of anything else, I'm going to like not pay our bills, which is not a thing that can happen in today's world. Part of me is really discouraged by that, that I'm never going to be able to spend less time managing the household things, because that just falls under my job. And I would totally delegate that to Scott, but that is not in his skill set, 100% not in his skill set. So I'm going to keep that for now if we want to continue having our bills paid on time. But what I did decide is that rather than just be discouraged by that, we need to get some system in place that lets me do it, that it's not taking up my creative work time. And so what I am planning to do when I actually see Scott, it's been a while since we've seen each other, like in the daylight hours, it's just one of those stretches of weeks. I really want to just start asking for like 15 minutes each evening after he gets home from work that I can walk into my office and shut the door and really work uninterrupted to kind of get that pile sorted. And maybe it won't be every day, but try for every day. And then also to sort out my inbox, because I am the primary, you know, caretaker of the household things. I'm the one who gets all the emails of when the car registration is due and all of that kind of thing, which is very, like, clutters the inbox. And if you don't deal with it right away, it gets buried and it doesn't get dealt with. So I'm hoping that even just like 15 minutes of the day that I can spend doing this like household management stuff will let me spend more time when I'm at my computer for my own work and less time doing all this management stuff.
Yeah, I love that idea, because what I've been doing with my household management stuff is pushing it off to Fridays, which is the day that I don't have kids. And honestly, it kind of makes me even more resentful of it, because that is supposed to be my dedicated work time. And now I'm spending, sometimes it seems like half my day, because I've pushed an entire week's worth of that stuff onto Friday. And between phone calls to make and emails to answer and paperwork, and the beginning of the year is always worse because you've got taxes and there's school re-enrollments. And so it'll slow down in the next month or two. But even so, it's just a lot. And so taking time, dedicated time for yourself to take care of that, like that might not seem like a step towards building up your creative life, but it so is, because it's getting that mental load off of you so that you can just get it taken care of and be done with it. And you know that you don't have to worry about it all day long or at nap time or whenever else, because you've got a space reserved for that. So I love that idea.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that that helps. And I also feel like if I do start my, you know, work time, whatever time alone that I have, with errands and inputting receipts and all of that kind of thing, or phone calls. Phone calls are the most draining thing to me as an introvert. That then if I get all that stuff clear off my desk, like, I have lost all motivation to do anything. And I really want to be able to sit down with the energy that I am excited to get to work on stuff, rather than I'm excited to get to work, but first I have to XYZ. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping, like you said, that even just that 15 minutes a day will be a little bit more life-changing than maybe I anticipate it will be. And one of the things that Jessica Abel has at the very end of the book is what she calls a restart activity. So when maybe you have all these systems in place and things are going really well, but you fall off the bandwagon because of XYZ, kids get sick, you have a big project due at work, and it kind of upsets your whole, you know, routine. And in the Growing Gills book, this activity really asks that you essentially do another stuff audit. And you go back and you clean off your desk and you kind of reset all of your systems and then start from there. And for me, I am, I think, type A enough that I never let things get to that point, like paperwork wise and that sort of thing. Like, it never gets terribly off the rails. But I'm still finding that I, even after I cut my client load in half at the new year, so I am doing, in theory, half the work that I was pre January 1st, I still have this like mental workload of always feeling like I have too much to do and not enough time to get it done. And so what I've just kind of decided, and part of this that jogged this as well, is shortly after the new year, I like pulled a weird muscle in my back, and I've still never quite recovered from that. And I think, and I've like gone to the chiropractor and all of that, and it's still like every now and again, it still like twinges, and I am in pain for a couple of days. I'm too young for this. I need to start taking some time to take care of my physical body as well as like my mental health and all of that. And so one thing that I tend to do when I'm really like stressed and anxious about things is I really like my shoulders hunch and I get really like physically tight. And I don't know if that's the same for everybody. So what I decided is to create kind of my own restart activity. And I'm actually calling it like my heart restart activity, because what happens to me when I get overwhelmed and anxious, I get angry. And I don't know if that's anyone else's default reaction, but I really get overwhelmed by everything I have to do, and I start focusing on how little time I have to do it in, and then I just get upset that it's all not fair and it's all on me and no one else can help with any of it. And they really can't. Like, no one else can do my job as a freelancer, and no one else can mother my child. Like, it's just not a thing. So I decided that when I'm overwhelmed, I'm going to do this little like heart restart activity, which sounds a little cheesy even for me, but I'm running with it. And what I'm going to do, I said, is to stop what I'm doing and like turn off my phone or put it in another room, drink at least 8 ounces of water, because hydration is always good for you, stretch for at least 10 minutes, and whether that's yoga or stretching, just doing something to make my body release some of that tension, and then either pray or read the Bible or do like a calming meditation, something for a few minutes, and then turn my attention to work and make a clear top three list for the day. And I was really proud of myself that I already had this written down when in our interview with Jessica, she said, choose three things to focus on. I was like, boom, already done. And basically then choose those three things. Like, these are the things you have to do. And if you get nothing else done today, everything's okay. And then be able to kind of re-enter life with a better attitude and a better outlook and focus for the rest of the day. So I feel like I created this little heart restart before I even started thinking about like the scarcity aspect that we talked with Jessica about as well, where you kind of get that tunnel vision of there is not enough, there is not enough, there is not enough, and you can only focus on one thing. And I feel like forcing myself to take maybe 15, 20 minutes to reset will not only maybe remind me that there is more time than I think there is, but that maybe I really can spend a little bit of it on myself too. So yes, we'll see how that works.
I might have to steal some of that for myself because I also have a tendency to get angry as my first reaction. I think that's probably more common than we might imagine. And I have a couple of different strategies that I've been using to work through that just because of my anxiety that I've been working through. So some of mine include things like take an extra magnesium capsule today and, you know, just different things like that. But I also have been using a meditation app. I don't use it every day, but only if I'm having like a bad day and I need to be like, okay, children, leave me alone for 5 minutes. And the app I use is called Insight Timer. And I have one. I only use one meditation from them that I really enjoy, and it's only like 4 or 5 minutes long, which is part of why I like it, because I can have time for it.
Exactly.
And it's this delightful, I want to say he's Scottish. There's like a Scottish guy who like reads this meditation and is basically like, just be calm. It will be all right. Think about things from other people's points of view. And I'm like, yes, I need this. So that is part of my own little restart that I've been doing, but I could definitely stand to add, you know, some stretching and some water in there too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So did you have any other activities from the book you wanted to talk about?
No, I think we should probably talk about how we're going to use these activities and everything that we've learned from Growing Gills to make some changes in our lives in the next month or so. So what are you planning on doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big thing that I think both of us are in the process of doing is basically pivoting my entire creative life to focus on writing fiction, which is what I've always wanted to do. And I'm just now realizing that if I don't do it, I'm never going to do it. So no more spending time or even emotional energy on kind of that personal memoir type stuff. And then kind of what I identified as my one goal for the next month, and that's the time frame I gave myself, was to restart the novel that I haven't touched in a long, long time. And I think what that's going to look like is looking at everything I have, like printing off all the pages, reading through them, see what's salvageable, because it's been a few years. Like, I'm a different person now. I'm not going to write the same novel. Even if it's about the same concept, it's not going to be the same book. And really kind of get into a new working document in Scrivener and start writing again. So that's, like, I figure for 30 days, it's probably more time than I need, but at least that gives me some wiggle room to get everything situated and set up so I have no excuse to not get started.
Yes. And I have a similar goal working on a novel. I'm starting mine from scratch. I have an outline that I created one full year ago and then never did anything with. So I have that I am going to hopefully be working with. And at the same time, as I was finishing up reading Growing Gills, I was also reading Atomic Habits by James Clear. This is a new book out that if you follow like Bookstagram and whatever, you've probably seen it around because it's one of those books that everybody's talking about right now in the new year, but it is actually better than all the hype it's getting, in my opinion. I was a little bit wary of it, but it's been a really great book. And the whole concept of this book is that making tiny changes day by day will add up to big things over time. So never feel like any change is too small if it gets you closer to your goal, which is exactly what I need to hear in this season of life.
Yes.
So I kind of combined some things from the two books to give myself a new writing habit. So what I'm doing that I've already started working on is the kids' nap time and rest time in the afternoon is now 100% for my creative work. And so depending on the day, that might mean reading, it might mean doing novel writing, it could mean knitting if it's a really weird day. And it's a really, really tiny change because nap time is oftentimes disrupted. Like, it sounds like, oh, you're giving yourself 2 or 3 hours, but no, that's not how it'll work. It might literally be 10 minutes, depending on how long my 4-year-old feels like sitting still by herself on the couch. So it's not that much time, but it used to be time in which I felt like I had to do something productive for the house, or I had to do something productive for work. And I never gave myself the afternoon nap time to either rest or do other creative work for myself. So that's a big step in the right direction. And one of the reasons I'm able to do that is because I recently added a second day of childcare per week to my routine, which is fantastic. So we have Wednesday childcare and Friday childcare now, and those are my work days where I focus on client work and maybe running a couple of errands without the kids, but usually just work. That has really freed up my afternoons to focus more on creative stuff, which has been great. And so my creative focus that I'm working on in most afternoons, and then occasionally I'll work on it at night, is the novel, like we talked about. And thanks to Atomic Habits, talking about teeny tiny goals, my goal is 200 words a day, which is not a ton for me. It might be a lot for somebody else, so not to make you feel bad if that sounds like a huge goal for you and I'm calling it small, but it's small for me because I am used to writing thousands of words very quickly for my clients. So 200 words a day, even if they're like terrible words, which many of them are, is at least pushing me closer to the goal of a finished novel, which if I do this every day for 365 days, I will have 73,000 words, which is a finished draft of like in most fiction genres, that is a finished draft by the end of 1 year. So that is currently what I am trying to do here. And it's a little scary to be working on something that's so big that I've been procrastinating on for so long.
Yeah, well, and something that you don't get to, like, have little wins along the way. It's not like a month from now I turn this in and it's done and I get to move on the next thing. Like, it's a long slog.
Yes.
I think that's wonderful. I had no idea that you had added an extra day of childcare. That's amazing. And I hope that's been really good for just feeling like you're not constantly on the hamster wheel, which is what often is the case. Having every afternoon, regardless of how long it was, to work on creative work, I can just see that being so life-giving. I know you've only been doing it for like a handful of days, but does it already make you excited about the day rather than like, ugh, I just have to do more client work now?
It does. It gives me something to look forward to for sure. And I think it also gives my kids a sense of, like, they often see me at the computer and they see that as work and they always try to pull my attention away from that. But if I'm doing creative work and say it's a day where the older two kids just do not want a nap and they're going to be by me and whatever, I'm not going to get any focused work done during that time anyway, but I can still read. It's not going to be like super in-depth reading because they will still interrupt me, but I'm still going to give myself permission to read, or I can still give myself permission to knit or to jot down novel ideas in a notebook, because for whatever reason, when you have a notebook, kids don't bother you, but if you have a computer, they bother you. So it's really freed up, I don't know, it's freed me up to put less pressure on nap time, where like I used to get very frustrated if they weren't napping, because in my head I was like, well, I need this time to do productive things and they're not letting me do my productive things. And now I'm like, well, I want this time to do creative things, but I can still do creative things even if they're around. Like, I can still make this work, and just viewing it more as rest time and less as productive time, I think, is a big shift.
Yeah, and that is actually something that I have been trying to sort through in my own brain for probably 6 months now, is how I can build more rest into my week. Because as it sits right now, with only the 1 day of childcare, I have enough work to keep me busy every hour that Arthur is napping, some evenings of the week, and that day of childcare. And there is no wiggle room. And this is talking like, I work nap times on Saturdays and I work nap times on Sundays, unless we have something going on that prevents me from doing that. So like I just don't take time to do nothing, which is not good either. And then also too, if we have something scheduled for a doctor's appointment or anything going on with family or anything on a Saturday, I'm essentially losing 2 hours of work and then I'm behind again. So even carving out a lot of extra time in slimming down my client roster hasn't bought me any more time during the day. Like, other things have filled that time. And so I feel like in 2019, I would love to build some version of rest into my days. And I think something like what I've been tossing around in my head is like maybe on Fridays, nap time is when I get to sit down and read a book or write, and I don't do client work on Fridays, but I haven't just like managed to make that happen yet. So we'll see. We'll see if I can work that in alongside all of the other habits I'm hoping to pick up via growing gills. We'll see if it can all be done at once.
Yeah, it's always a big struggle when you are working from home and you've got that like fluctuating workload and you're trying to make it all work. But if sometimes it seems like it's just a big Jenga puzzle, and if one little thing falls out of place, the whole routine just topples over and you're screwed.
Yeah, like a kid gets sick and you don't get to work for 2 days because you spent the time in urgent care or whatever it is. It just, I feel like that is the hardest part about being the work at home parent, is you have to parent and work at the same time all the time.
Yes, so, exactly.
Yeah. So I think, and part of this too needs to be me just being better at asking for help, or maybe better at, when I do get into a busy season, just like a whole bunch of projects all kind of clamp down at once, maybe I do ask for a second day of childcare and see if that's even a possibility instead of automatically thinking it's not.
Right. That's a good point too. You never know until you ask. So I like that way of thinking. So, well, we have talked everybody's ears off about growing gills, and we promised this was not sponsored. We just really enjoyed Jessica's book and her way of approaching the creative life. So we would encourage you to check out Growing Gills for yourself. We will share a link to it in the show notes. And the book is basically an early version of the workshop she runs now, which is called the Creative Focus Workshop. And if you don't have the life capacity or the budget for that workshop, then starting with Growing Gills is a really great beginning point, just to see what a difference it can make in your creative life if you are, like we were, kind of struggling to find focus and to find those habits and routines that can support your creative life instead of taking away from it.
Yes. Yes, we definitely encourage you to check out that book. And what else, other than Growing Gills, Ashley, have you been reading lately? So you read Growing Gills, you read Atomic Habits. Is there anything else on your shelf that's really enjoyable these days?
Yeah, so another one that I finished recently is The Girl in the Tower by Katherine Arden, which is the second book of the Winter Night trilogy. The first book is The Bear and the Nightingale, which I read like a little over a year ago. It's a good winter series because it takes place in Russia. It's based on Russian folklore, and it deals with the Russian frost demon. So it's really, really interesting and a fun read when we're getting all this snow and cold weather, at least here in the upper Midwest. So that was a great second book in the series. And now I am eagerly awaiting to get my hands on the third book. I'm in the dreaded library hold list.
Same. I just finished The Girl in the Tower 2 a few weeks ago. And it was, like I said, it was a very good follow-up to the first one. And now I really want to see how the trilogy concludes.
Yeah, it's a fascinating world she's built. So, and then I have also just started a book called How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen by Joanna Faber and Julie King. And one of those authors is the daughter of the woman who wrote the original book, which is How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, which people are probably more familiar with. That's kind of been like one of the bestseller parenting books for decades now. And I have not read that one, though I've heard good things about it. But this one is specifically about little kids ages 2 to 7. So I am right in there with my 2-year-old and my 4-year-old. And this book is so necessary in my house right now. I'm a little embarrassed about it. But so we're working through that book to hopefully make the days with young children go a little bit smoother, so that then the creative times can be less... less, I don't know, angry.
We actually, hilariously, while we were at my in-laws over the holidays, so I was trying to get Arthur's attention, and of course I'm saying, Arthur, 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 you know, and getting like the more closer to the mom voice, the more times I say his name. And my mother-in-law is sitting next to me and she goes, Arthur, and he whips his head around for her. So I really think there's like a biological preconditioning that your children do not listen to your voice anymore. this was living proof.
Oh, I could totally see that happening. And Arthur is young enough too, where it's not like he was just doing it to be annoying. It was probably literally like he did not hear you. Yeah. Like, he just tuned you right out.
I was like, you're kidding me, child. This is what I've been saying all along. He just stops listening to me. I am reading a really interesting book right now called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And the tagline is Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business. And it's written by Neil Postman. And I want to say it was put out in like 1984 is the first edition. So this is an old book and it's fairly academic. It's pretty thin. It's, I mean, no more than like 200 pages or so. But it is really dense. It reads much more textbook-like. And the author is kind of tracing the ways in which we used to, you know, everyone used to read things. Everyone used to read newspapers and books and the latest, you know, treatise and all of this. And they used to have big conversations about it. And one of the things he talks about even is the Lincoln-Douglas debates when they were debating to be the senator of Illinois and how someone would debate or would talk for 3 hours. And then someone else would get up and talk for 3 hours. And then someone else would get up and talk for an hour and a half. And people would sit through 7.5 hours of dialogue, no problem. They had fun with it. It was like the thing they went to do on a Saturday. And how different it is now that we've kind of switched over to where our main media of, and this is in the 80s, so keep this in mind, the main source of media and news and information was television. And so he's just kind of like tracing that change in people's attention span, but also in the way that we take in information without context. And as I'm reading this book, I just keep thinking how much more that's true with the internet. And so that has been just a fascinating read. I mean, a rather hard read. Like, it's a slow book, but it's been really fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds like it is just so intriguing, and it really makes me wish that the author would come back and update it for a second edition. Yeah. With how the internet has changed that even further beyond television, because I really do feel, and many people have written about this, but it seems like there is a lack of attention where you can't even imagine somebody sitting for 7 hours to listen to a debate nowadays. Like, they would, I mean, even if people were there, see, and this is, again, how it goes, if you were there in person, which many people wouldn't be able to be, they would just broadcast it on TV, and you would see the snippets that they pulled out for you to see that they chose, and you're never getting the whole picture. So I think that that book sounds absolutely fascinating, even if it might lead to frustrating conclusions about the society we live in.
Yeah, it really, really is interesting. So on the flip side, the latest book by Leigh Bardugo just came in, called King of Scars at the Library for the Holtz List. So I'm going to dive into that one for more of like end of the day lighter reading, because I can't read a textbook at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And I am very excited to hear how you like that book, because I am first on the hold list for that one. And my library is still processing it. And it's been processing it for like a week. I can see on my holds list. And I'm like, you guys, just put the sticker on it and send it to me, please.
Give me a call, please. That is hilarious. I got it on Kindle format, so they didn't have to put a sticker on my book. They just had to like upload it or something.
That is probably why it came through so quickly.
Yeah, so I'm excited to read it. I really loved the Six of Crows duology, and I feel like King of Scars follows some of those same characters. I really don't know anything. I just saw that Leigh Bardugo had a new book out, and I clicked, like, yes, add to Holt's list.
So. Yes. So what I have read about it is that it actually combines some of the characters from Six of Crows with her Grisha trilogy,
which
was her first set of novels that she came out with. And I think it's set more in the Grishaverse, as people call it, in, like, that universe. But it does incorporate some characters from both. So it should be a really fun book to read. There's an example of an author who has built an entire world around the figments of her imagination, and it's just delightful.
It really is. So I think that's all we have for this bonus episode, in which we just gush and gush about Jessica Abel's Growing Gills. So we hope everyone checks that out. Again, there will be a link in the show notes, and we will chat with you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.